The podcast you're about to hear is made possible thanks to the generous supporters of patreon.com/Ian Bolesworth and patreon.com/burialsandbeyond. If you enjoy this podcast and you'd like to contribute and you'd like to get involved, there's tons of other content on both Patreons as well, then please consider coming joining and helping the project along. Thank you.
And welcome to Loopholes episode 19, your weekly discussion podcast about all things esoteric and esoterotic. I'm Kate Cheryl, hello.
And I'm Ian Bolesworth, hello. And I'm glad you're here. Meaning to ask you something.
Right, okay.
Bit delicate.
Yeah.
Would you consider selling me...
Don't you tell... Yes.
Your worn tights, please.
Right. Okay.
And I can't think of a more polite way of asking.
Well, I'm glad you said please.
Yeah.
You know, you've got more manners than 90% of the other requests for worn tights I've had in my inbox this week.
I'll be honest with you, I'm resenting this a little bit. Now, the problem is your television programme's come out in America.
Yeah, I think it's being shown, I think, on the Travel Channel at the minute.
Okay. Excellent promotion, well done. I think it's on the Travel Channel. So it's something like that, anyway. I'm kind of cross with you a little bit because
don't
get me wrong. Mm-hmm. Awful. Unsolicited requests like that.
Yeah.
Awful. However.
Yes.
You've not gone back and checked how much they're willing to pay. I'm willing to wear tights for a few days.
I know.
For you to send them off.
I know, you're very generous.
We'll go 50-50 on it.
Yeah.
We'll clean up. Well, ironically, we wouldn't clean the tights. They'd be a write-off. Yeah. But... I'd be willing to do that.
Okay, well, I'll consider it. I mean, I haven't blocked all of them.
Have you not?
No.
Really?
No. Well, a few more...
Are you
more
doing this based on looks?
No, just... I think there's been a repeat, so a few
I see. Okay. It's ghastly. The thing that I was thinking about it more than anything else is I've seen your programme, obviously. Mm-hmm. See, I wouldn't match up that lass, as in you, on that programme with there being much chance of getting a used tight. No. I wouldn't... I mean, that's like, gotta shoot your shot, I know that. But yes. They're having a crack at it, aren't they?
They certainly are. I mean, maybe, you know, they've got like the full uncut episodes where we went to several strip clubs in search of ghosts.
Okay, but... as always, I've heard this many times, I've seen it on a couple of occasions.
Yeah.
Take you to a strip club, you're on that pole. Like, there's no stopping you.
No, you can't. I'm like a magnet. Elaborate routines and wearing tights. Yes, go for
it. This gets
buy
out
my
of
tights,
hand.
Buy my tights. Patreon.com/burialsandbeyond.
Graham Vallis said, "Hi Ian, I'm not seeing a download option on this audio. Is this something you need to toggle on at your end? I'm on a Mac, by the way." Yeah. Tom Linklater said, "Also noticed this on Windows. Seems Patreon changed up the layout. Click on the three dots beside the like and share buttons and you'll see the download option." Graham Vallis said, "Thanks, Tom." And then Guy Wilson chipped in and said, "Thanks, that was driving me mad." So there we go. Another mystery solved on Loopholes. Craig Harrison says, "Fabulous episode as always. Thanks both." The reason I'm laughing at the moment is because a couple of the people who've left comments, quite a few of them in fact, have now all got new names.
Oh, after you
Patreon.
Did your Cabin Fever run.
I did a run of Cabin Fever, a podcast that's just me. Yeah. Every day at the end of the month, and we formed a cult.
Yes, you did.
So they've all got new names now. So Craig Harrison is the cult cat fusser. Kyle Griffiths. Three for super cool Patreon kids. That's, of course, there's extra episodes on Patreon.
Mm-hmm.
Ago, we had Kate being coy about conclusions.
Yeah.
Who could have foreseen how rapidly we progressed to fanny scratching after visiting Cot Lane? This is true, isn't it? And again, today you've been talking about your behaviour in strip clubs.
I know.
It's like you're coming out of your shell a little bit.
I think I need help.
Yeah, potentially, Annette Truby, who's cult comms, by the way,
mm-hmm.
"Really enjoyed this episode. You guys were on fire. Scratching Fanny is a very similar situation to the Fox sisters, and it does leave you questioning just how gullible or trusting people were back then. And I then question whether society in 2023 is much more cynical and sceptical. YouTube paranormal videos would suggest people are just as eager to believe in the fantastical as they ever were. I think we sort of came away from that a little bit last week, because I did say, I don't buy it that they were all stupid.
No, I think that's a little hole that many people sort of fall into when we discuss paranormal goings-on, or even just any kind of cultural thing, you know, that we don't necessarily see as the norm today. It's very easy to look back and go, oh, God, weren't they silly?
Yeah.
But even, like, women wearing elaborate clothing, it's like, oh, God, haven't they discovered trackies yet?
Yeah, it's
context.
I mean, it's obviously technologically less advanced than we are nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
Intellectually less advanced only for the reasons that less information was available,
yes,
I guess.
Yeah.
So there wasn't enough to learn, as it were, because mm-hmm. things weren't known so much then. But as I said last week, people is people. So you can still have a degree of intelligence to you mm-hmm. as a person.
Yeah.
And a degree of being able to see when something is just daft.
Yeah, critical thinking has kind of been around
forever. It's not a new concept, is it, at all?
Yeah, and also the knocks and the scratches between Cock Lane and the Fox sisters is a really good point to make, because as we know, that the fourth Fox sister was Arsehole Fox. And so it follows in that beautiful tradition.
You're not letting this go. Are you just going to go full filth now? Is that what's going to happen?
Look, here? I've upset my mum.
Have you? So... Have you upset your mum?
So I feel like I'm just digging that trench now.
What, with loopholes, you mean?
Yeah, well, should we do my comments? Ooh.
I've got a couple more comments to go.
Let's just briefly dip into my comments.
Okay.
My comments encompass also text messages and phone calls
okay,
from my mum.
Okay.
Who very politely said, let me read it out to you.
Okay.
That was a very nice episode, but can we have an episode with less bums, fannies and dicks, please?
Wow.
So I'd say, first of all, mother, it's fewer, not less. So we can tell who went to the Polytechnic.
Oh my God. That's the issue with academics right there, isn't it? Imagine having that in your family. Goodness me.
You know, my mum was Ed Girl, you know.
Yeah,
well.
It meant something very different in her day then.
So I'd like to say I'm terribly sorry to my lovely, supportive, encouraging mother.
Yeah.
And to say that this will be a cock, fanny and bum-free episode.
But you didn't talk about
as last week's was, really.
Yeah, it was. It was just the words, but they meant...
And we don't think we mentioned, like, Bum Avenue or anything last week, did we?
No, well, we're pacing ourselves, aren't we?
We really are. Some lovely comments from Warren O'Neill and PJ, who really enjoyed the episode. Annette Truby, Cult Comms.
Yeah.
She asked about the cock videos that I promised on
right.
my Patreon.
Yeah, okay.
They're at a higher tier, Annette. You need to really... really commit to get those.
Right, okay.
Please don't come to my Patreon expecting those. They don't exist.
I noticed that you said that about that, but you didn't actually amend what you said about if people went on your Patreon, they could get your used tights. You never said, please don't come on my Patreon for that after you said it. That is actually, you've put that out there as a deal now.
I mean, times are hard, you know.
But we've also given away, it'll just be me wearing them for a few days. What if I get a feel for it and don't want to take them off?
Well, I mean, it's quite chilly at the minute. You might want some underneath your trousers.
Are tights warm? Do they make you warm?
If you layer them underneath things, they can add an extra bit of warmth.
Oh, yeah. I always assumed they'd just be like, because the see-through and stuff.
Well, not necessarily. You can have different colours, mate.
Right, okay.
Different, like, thicknesses.
So they can keep
different
your legs warm?
Denier. Yeah.
Oh.
Well, Annette says...
Would they stay up? I've got quite short legs. Would they stay up on my legs?
They're elasticated.
Right.
Yeah, you can get loads of different sizes, different denier.
Yeah.
Get nice patterned ones.
Okay.
And Annette said that she's really interested in the concept of assumed authority.
Yeah.
And hopes that we'll cover that more in
the
later
episode.
Yeah,
definitely. We definitely will. But I don't know what there is to say about it. Again, well, you can do the research, can't you? You do all the research and then I'll just comment on the research.
In your pair of tights, that'd be lovely.
Yeah, easy done.
Yeah, Tango of the Robes. This is all you're doing, all of this.
Yeah, that's another cult member.
Yeah, said that turning up to give a lecture naked is exactly the kind of no ducks given confidence power play that I can't help but fully respect.
Yeah, she's, you know, I don't know what the politically correct word for it would be.
Tragic
for
is
what you're
the
becoming.
General one, yeah.
Tango said on mine, I saw that unlike Kate, you included official in your post title. That's because when I posted this episode on Patreon, I said official because there was an unreleased publicly episode last week.
Yes.
Before listening, I thought this was the beginning of a new inter-Patreon feud, like releasing at 10:59 rather than 11 a.m. Yeah, so my one was official on my Patreon, mm-hmm. but on your Patreon it's not
mine
official.
Mine was bootleg.
Bootleg, yeah. Yeah, go on.
And Paul Kenny said, excellent episode. It does make me think, though. if the famous cases that set off ghosts are fake, then is it all fake? What was the first ever ghost?
Well, it was the question, is it all fake?
Well,
can I feel this question, please? Go on, what was the first ever ghost then? History buff.
Oh, thank you. Well, broadly speaking,
yeah,
like, well, we can only know the first ever ghost based on written records and like artistic depictions.
This is the first ever reported ghost, essentially.
Yes, yeah. So we think they've been milling about in some way or another in societal belief for millennia.
Right.
Really, and the first depiction of a ghost, as far as I know, is from like 3,500 years ago, and it's an ancient Babylonian tablet from 1500 BC,
right,
which depicts a ghost being shown back to the afterlife, like being taken back to the afterlife.
Because I was just thinking, Jesus did it, was a ghost for a bit, wasn't he? When he did his thing, when he come out of the cave.
Yeah, he was tangible, though.
Oh, was he? I've not seen the photos.
Right, he was real.
Right.
You know, he's the son of God, but he is inherently human.
Yeah.
And so when he was tested, things like that, by his disciples who didn't believe that he'd come back.
Was this after being on the cross, this?
Yes.
After and then he's buried down... in a, behind a rock.
He was in a tomb with a large stone covering it. They rolled back the stone.
Yeah.
Where's Jesus?
Right. And where was he?
So then he came back, showed himself to Mary Magdalene, who was like, oh, here he is. And he went and visited, this is like an awful Sunday school version of it.
Okay.
Some of his disciples weren't too sure that it was him, i.e. doubting Thomas.
Right.
And so people like Thomas, for example,
yeah,
put their finger into his stigmata.
Right, okay.
To prove that it was really him.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you can't do that to a ghost.
And
could you go straight through?
And then what? Then what happened?
And then Christ ascended to heaven, the ascension.
So what did he fly off?
Well, he ascended, yeah.
Yeah, but, okay.
Well, not like put Superman. In layman's,
well, that's what I'm asking you. I don't know what this means.
All right.
Because I remember these Bible stories.
Yeah.
And I remember the whole thing of him coming out from the tomb and all that sort of business. Yeah. But I don't remember the big ending.
Right, he went up. And then his disciples
so
were the ones
they
that...
They saw him go up.
He ascended, yes.
I'm asking a dead simple question. Did they see the body that would come back to life go up into the sky?
And then he went to heaven, yes.
Yeah, they saw that happen.
And then, after that, they had to carry on the word of God and the teachings of Christ.
Right. So, how long would you watch that for? Say you were in my garden, right? And you could ascend to heaven.
Yeah.
You'd be in view for ages.
Well,
so how long would you watch him for?
They didn't give timings in the Bible.
Well,
you have any idea how many times?
These are the bits that make me suspicious.
Oh, I'm sorry that they didn't... Like, the Turin Shroud isn't actually a photocopy of Christ.
No, it's that there's not enough detail. It's like, yada, 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 look after the poor, do a few miracles.
Oh, here comes Lazarus.
Right? Fish and loaves, killing all the babies,
no,
get put
Jesus
on a cross.
Didn't do
no,
that.
This happened in the stories, though, all of that sort of business. Yada, yada, yada. And then it's like an afterthought. And then he died and came back to life and then went to heaven. All right, the end.
Well, he was always going to return to the house of his father, wasn't he?
Right, okay, I see. I don't know. Andy Walker, final comment. Andy Walker, by the way, is the ambassador from the 1990s. Especially Hooch and Euro 96.
Oh.
I may have missed something about Carol at East Drive. Did she live there during the kids playing up? Or did she move there after the stories broke? Just wondering if she got authority through being there and experience with the site. Hope that makes sense. I'm not sure.
Mm.
Whenever I've spoke to Carol, and whenever I've seen Carol interviewed on things and all that, and talking about it, she speaks about, is it Jean Pritchard? Is that her name? She talked about Jean in a very first person way, like she knew her.
Right.
Well, Jean was like this, Jean did this, and she didn't want to move, and, you know, it's like that.
Yeah.
So I'm not actually certain. I've always assumed that Carol has been there for a long time, and she's got grown-up kids and stuff as well.
Yeah.
And she's local, so I don't know. I think she was. I think she was there at the time of the reported occurrences at 30 East Drive.
Mm.
But I'm not certain. I haven't got a number. And when I emailed her to ask if she wanted to come to the premiere of the film, she didn't reply. I have seen her since, but there we go. Well, there's the comments this week, and we'll get on now, shall we, to the main section.
Mm.
Bear with, caller. Right, what aspect of the esoteric are we going to be discussing today?
Well, this week, I thought we'd have a lovely chat about sleep paralysis.
Sleep paralysis. I spoke about that recently, again on another podcast.
Yes, so I thought it'd be quite nice to bring everything full circle, because we've touched on sleep paralysis before as well.
Yeah.
But before we do, had a thought that might tie in a few little biblical things with our esoteric world.
I know when you're grooming people via this podcast, you're already luring them in with your tights, and now you're trying to get them to convert.
Look, I could just do with a bit of extra cash.
Right, okay, same. Go on.
The Lecky bills.
I told you, sell your tights.
I know, you keep telling me. But I was thinking that Doubting Thomas, who, you know, refused to believe that Christ had come back from the dead.
Was Thomas one of the disciples?
Yes. Right, okay. Yes. And he didn't believe that Christ had come back, and he wanted kind of tangible evidence in front of him that this seemingly fantastical thing had happened.
Would have been me, that.
But then he got it, and there's some really powerful, if a little bit icky and beautiful, depictions of this moment where Doubting Thomas was touching Christ's wounds.
Right.
Famously one by Caravaggio, which is lovely, but oh, the flesh.
Right.
So could Thomas be seen as kind of like the first famous skeptic?
I hear what you're saying. Because I was thinking, oh, this sounds like me. This one, I'd be dousing it. I'd be saying it talks are rubbish. I'd be doing all that.
Yeah.
However, I took it back a bit further and thought, I wouldn't be a follower in the first place. I wouldn't have been in that gang. So if you're completely free thinking, if you like, or you're analytical thinking and stuff, you don't tend to be a follower in terms of you don't tend to be part of a gang necessarily.
A gang. It was more of like a break-off.
It was
group.
A gang. It was a gang.
Oh, okay.
They all wore gang colours. But the part of it that... That just occurred to me then. I know that there are skeptic conventions and all that sort of thing. I know they do QED and all those sort of things. But I think they always feel a little bit cultish to me in a quite an odd way. I've attended one of those, because we filmed there, but I've actually attended one of those conventions. And it did feel a little bit like, well, this is as bad as the other side. That's how I felt about it. I've always found skepticism to be a more... individualistic pursuit, you know, that you're centred within yourself.
Yes.
This might sound like I'm being very grand about it, but that's kind of how I see it myself. So if you're part of a gang, part of followers, part of a club, I guess, that feels more in line with the esoterotic.
Yeah.
That tends to be quite gang-led.
But what if you had been shown directly in the first place how special this man was and what miracles he could perform, what amazing feats, he could walk on water.
Yeah, so
you know,
here's
where...
You've
seen that.
I know, I can apply critical thinking to biblical fantasy. I can tell you now what it is. If that was the case, here's my reading of the situation. If that was the case, and that's why Thomas, who was just called Thomas at that point, joined the gang, then why did he doubt that Jesus had come back? Why would he doubt it?
Because he's
already had the proof that this is outside of the norm. This is paranormal. Things that are going on here is outside the norm. So he's already had that proof. So nothing should surprise him at that point. So why would he start doubting it at that point, unless they just wanted to coin a phrase?
No, but what if, like, everything that Christ stood for, they fully believed in, but then his death and, you know, the whole process of his trial and being passed through Pilate and things this, and then his really, really brutal public death, like his crucifixion, would shake anyone's faith, because it showed this amazing figure, Christ, as just a man. And so
I've heard the song.
Plenty of people did have
kind
of shaken faith at the end, because they never expected to see the Son of God treated just like a common criminal.
I know, I'm not doubting all them bits. I'm just saying that if he's doing tricks with loaves and fishes and all that sort of stuff and turning water into wine...
But I think tricks is an interest. Let's go for miracles, shall we?
Tricks.
It is Jesus.
So... With all that in mind, nothing should surprise him then.
But
let's put it into different terms. If David Blaine...
Oh, jeez.
Right?
Jesus.
Please don't blaspheme. If David Blaine was in a box, right, hung up from a crane and stuff...
Yeah.
And then the box fell to the floor and smashed to smithereens...
Yeah.
No one would have been running around going, he's died, I can't believe it, he's died, this stunt has gone terribly wrong. They'd all be going, all right, okay, so what now? He's going to come out of a different door now, isn't he?
There would be people doing that, but there also would be people going, oh my God, this has gone horribly wrong.
They get very fighty, these religious people.
So, sleep paralysis.
Well, me that took the Lord's name in vain.
Sleep paralysis.
Yeah.
What is it?
I should tell you as well, on the subject of sleep paralysis, this is where it comes into play. Annette Truby has already had a comment, but she can have another comment that I'm taking from another podcast.
Right.
She told me about something that happened with her. I couldn't remember the phrase sleep paralysis on this podcast. And she said, you were talking about sleep paralysis. I used to get it regularly in my teens and 20s. I would see a man walk up to my bed with an axe, raise it, and I would literally leap up before the axe hit me. It was terrifying.
It sounds it.
That's what happened to Annette.
Yeah.
And I was talking about an occurrence when I was much younger, in my early teens, and my grandma, because my granddad and grandma would look after me every morning because my parents worked, so they would come over and look after me and get me off to school and all the rest of it. My grandma would always bring me a drink in the morning and whatever, sausage sandwich, whatever it was. And on this particular morning, she woke me up with a tea or a coffee or whatever it was next to the bed. She then went out to the bedroom, probably to finish off my sausage sandwich.
Yeah.
I fell back asleep. She shouted and said, Ian, are you up? And I did that thing where you're like, do you ever do this thing when you wake up and answer the phone? If your phone's ringing and you're asleep, where you do everything you possibly can to make it sound like you weren't asleep. Like,
every day.
I do it, but I do it when I practice. So while the phone's ringing, I'll go, hello, hello, hello. I'll do that and then I'll answer it.
That's a good idea, though.
So I've got it right. But anyway, I did a similar thing and I was going, yeah, yeah, I'm up. And I wasn't.
Yeah.
And this made total sense to me. I then got a bottle of Slazenger Sport deodorant that was at the side of the bed next to where the tea was, took the lid off it and sprayed it right into my mouth.
Yeah.
That was me having a drink of my tea.
Yeah.
That was the logic in my head. As soon as it hit my throat, I was like, whoa! And I can still taste it now when I think about it. But that made perfect sense to me.
Yeah, it's like your body had woken up, but your brain was lagging.
Yeah, but it's. I think it's more that if you said to me now, have a spray of that Slazenger Sport deodorant in your mouth, I'd go, no. But in that moment, it made total sense. Yeah. So reality was suspended.
Yeah, it's like a weird disconnect.
Yeah, okay. Well, there we go. That's going to be my overall take with sleep paralysis and relaying it back towards people who claim to have seen things and claim that the ghost of so-and-so was at the end of their bed and get all those stories.
Yeah.
That's my response. Slazenger Sport deodorant.
Okay.
Made perfect sense in that moment.
Okay, well, it's rendered my whole argument useless now.
Okay, no, I'll listen.
Well, sleep paralysis, it doesn't sound like, really, it's very ghosty-ghosty, but it's a lot of interpretations of what people experience during sleep paralysis are in the kind of more paranormal realms or, you know, more religious realms, really.
Yeah.
So sleep paralysis is, kind of in layman's terms, when your brain is awake, but your body's still in sleep mode. So you're conscious, but your body is paralysed. It's very self-explanatory. Okay.
Is it a recognised medical thing?
Yes.
It is recognised, yeah.
So it's when you're paralysed, and often, like with Annette, a lot of people experience terrors. They feel like they're being attacked. And there are loads of similar sightings between people that have sleep paralysis.
Right.
So a lot of people say they feel like they're being choked, like there's a pressure on their chest. And obviously they can't react to any of this. They can just see.
Is there a biological reason that that would happen? Would you actually be choking in that? Could you be choking for real in that
situation? Not necessarily. You wouldn't be choking, but because your body's still in sleep mode, basically your body's in REM sleep.
Right.
So you can't breathe as deeply as you would have done if your whole body was properly awake.
I see.
And so that is thought to kind of mimic the sensation of choking because you can't breathe enough. And when you're in a panicked state and you're hallucinating or you're seeing things, depending on what you believe, these horrible experiences, these pains, these panics, these threats can seem very real.
Can hyperventilating cause hallucination? That seems like it would make sense.
Yeah.
If you were hyperventilating or if you were getting too little oxygen or whatever to the brain, that you could... I mean, we've all seen stars and things. You know, we've all seen flashing lights and that sort of business.
Yeah. It does seem to be quite reactionary, though. So, broadly, sleep paralysis happens either when you're just about to fall asleep or when you're just about to wake up. Mm. And these periods of sleep paralysis can happen for 20 seconds up to a few minutes. So it's broadly quite a short period.
And you're paralysed. You can't do nothing.
Yeah, it's kind of momentary alertness, but with a complete loss of voluntary muscle movement. So you can't move your body at all. And it affects about 8%. 8% of the general population. I mean, I've read loads of estimates about this sort of thing, and it seems to go up to about 30 at most. But broadly, people are aware of their surroundings, but they can't move. And there's fear, there's dread, there's hallucinations, like we said. And there are similarities across cultures and across races, age ranges, about what these people see. And it can be footsteps, it can be demons, it can be feeling of dread, feeling that you're about to die, like a real sense of danger. Now, there are two types of sleep paralysis. There's hypnagogic and hypnopompic. Now, hypnagogic is the one that occurs at the onset of sleep or just before falling right. asleep. And the other one happens just after waking. But essentially, it's the same thing. So when you're asleep, the brain cycles through five different stages. So when you fall asleep, you're never just in one state.
Yeah.
So you'll go through stages 1 to 4 and then REM sleep.
Yeah.
Which is rapid eye movement.
Yeah.
And about 25%-ish of your sleep will be REM sleep because your sleep cycle isn't set. You know, you might get woken up, you know, or have bad sleep that night. But REM is when the body becomes energised in a way. So during REM, the body, this is the important bit, it shuts off kind of the spinal cord to right. shut off movement. And it's kind of a protective measure to stop you hurt yourself or others while you're dreaming. You know, okay. people thrash about.
Yeah.
So in an ideal world, REM sleep would prevent that from happening. So you wouldn't actually be reacting properly as you would do to your dreams.
Okay.
Now, sleep paralysis is this tricky little bit that occurs when there's issues with the on-off switches between REM sleep and waking. REM is only meant to happen when you're asleep.
Okay.
This shutting off of the body is only meant to happen when you're asleep. But the neurons that control the wake side of the wake-sleep cycle can be weakened in some people. And so when some people are in REM, these neurons can kick in preemptively that prevent, you know, muscle movement, but the mind can still be awake. Okay, are we following?
Yeah.
Okay, so in the brain...
I mean, what I feel like at the moment mm-hmm. in my head is, just keep giving them enough rope. Keep giving them enough rope. Because this is, like, potentially open and shut, this. Because this is a recognised medical thing.
Mm-mm.
This is a real thing. I asked you, is this official?
Yes,
you said yes.
It is.
And this completely explains so many things.
Yeah.
So many reported cases
are
completely explained by this.
Yeah. But it's also not very well understood by science.
Okay.
Yet.
Yeah.
There are loads of people specialising in studies of it, people that are trying to understand it more.
Mm.
But broadly speaking, this is one of the areas of sleep science that we don't know an awful lot about.
But I imagine that scientists who are studying this, because I know that dreams aren't very well known about really what they are.
Yes.
You know, a lot of people speculate what it is. It's it's your brain dealing with certain issues. Mm-hmm. It's a triggered response to something, you know, all those things. It's a fantasy. It's something you want. It's something you don't want. All these different things, explanations. But no one's actually yet said what dreams are definitively.
Yeah.
But I'm relatively confident that scientists aren't going, well, we don't know everything yet, but we think what it is a trigger, there's a switch between it shuts down your spinal column and then it doesn't, if that's been worn away a little bit, all the things you said, I'm pretty sure no scientist is saying all that. And that's where we're up to with it. Or it could just be actual ghosts. I'm pretty sure they're not saying the last bit. So it's either that, what we've learned so far, or it is ghost, definitely.
Yeah, well, yeah, there are a lot of Catholic hospitals in America.
Yeah, yeah.
Catholics are big into the demons.
Yeah.
Back to biological squishiness.
How many people who could have been saved have died because of it?
Oh, God, don't. It's a horrible thought. Yeah. Right, so the brain. Now, the amygdala, which is the bit of the brain that's kind of used to process fear.
I know what you're doing.
Really? What?
Because you know how squeamish I am. You're now chucking in all biology stuff to throw me off my game.
It's still in people. You don't have to see any of it. But this bit of your lovely think bubble, is that better?
It is better. I like to choose to not use the part of my brain that acknowledges that there's a brain in there.
Okay. That's very wise.
I like to decide... Yeah. That the understanding created by the brain about itself...
Yeah.
I don't want to know.
Okay, so don't what's know up there? Like, just like a bread bin or something?
Well, it's just my head in it. I don't know. I don't want to know anything about the brain. Sorry, okay. Dean Burnett, if you're listening.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to know anything biological about the brain. I hate it. I hate the idea of that because you're thinking about a thing and the thing you're thinking about is the thing that's thinking.
Okay, right. You've got...
It's a minefield.
You've got a bag of marshmallows.
Yeah.
All right. One of those marshmallows
yeah.
is used to process fear.
Right. That's better.
And that marshmallow is active throughout REM sleep.
Yeah.
And scientists think that it's this particular marshmallow that's active
yeah.
that is responsible for the fear
okay.
and the terror aspects that people experience during sleep paralysis. Okay?
Yeah.
So, broadly, genetics could be to blame for people that experience this. Could be an add-on to all the sleep disorders, yeah. mental health issues, or just poor sleep.
Yeah.
And people who sleep on their back.
Okay.
All experience sleep paralysis more.
Right.
And there isn't any treatment for it.
Yeah.
I mean, there's preventative...
Even you're not saying, or it could be ghosts.
Or it could be ghosts.
No, but...
It could be demons.
No, but, you know, think about that.
Yeah.
Something that is widely recognised as a thing that happens and yeah. acknowledged officially as a thing mm-hmm. that happens
mm-hmm.
is more likely
yeah.
to be the reason
mm-hmm.
your grandma's on the end of your bed.
Yeah.
Like it is.
Yeah. Unless she's alive and you live with her and you've just sprayed deodorant.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean,
all right,
your departed yeah. grandma. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm kind of in a weird place with this because although I am all ghosty-ghosty,
yeah.
I did also used to suffer from sleep paralysis when I was younger.
Okay.
And so I can kind of separate the two in my own bag of marshmallows.
Yeah.
You know? But
that's all part of your bag of marshmallows. That's all part of how that works. Honestly, I find it really frightening thinking mm-hmm. about the brain
mm-hmm.
because it unlocks too many ideas to me.
Yeah.
When I think about how the brain works.
Mm-hmm.
It destroys the idea of love.
Yeah.
It destroys the idea of consciousness. It destroys because it's yeah. all like this is all just a trick.
It's like trying to comprehend space as well. You get to a point where it's just
no. It's not comprehending it. It isn't comprehending it. It is the fact that I know that the thing in your head
mm-hmm.
can make you feel like you're more special than you are.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Which is where I believe the idea of a soul comes from.
Yeah.
And that's to do with comprehension. The idea that. Well, no, I exist. I couldn't not exist.
Yeah. So you see the soul as just the ego.
It's not just me. It's not just the things I'm thinking or my mm-hmm. interactions with people. There is a whole other world inside me.
Yeah.
As we all have. But it's just biological.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a trick. So falling in love is a trick. Because love's not a tangible thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that your brain reacts to people.
Mm-hmm.
And gives you this immense feeling of, I guess, elation,
yeah.
really. Where you're like, oh, I'm very attracted to this person.
Mm-hmm.
Then you can start arguing about biology. It's like, well, it's just because you are pre-programmed to reproduce. That's why you're attracted to somebody. You know, all
yeah.
those things
yeah.
come into it. But it's not a very romantic way of looking at things.
No, I wouldn't
but
hire
romance
you.
Romance is also a construct of the brain.
Right. Yeah, I wouldn't hire you to write Valentine's cards.
Okay? Nothing is real.
Oh, God, it's happened. Listener, it's happened. I'm
Listener,
sorry.
Listener, nothing is real.
Well, let's just have a look at demons, all
You
right?
should have jumped all over that. If I'm saying nothing is real...
Then everything is real.
No, then reality, which is my A1 argument,
mm.
that's not reality. That's mm-hmm. not what's real. That's me confounding my own argument, isn't it?
Yeah, but I'm
If I say nothing is real, it's like, well, then why can't ghosts exist?
I know.
And I ain't got an answer for that.
But I know how you want me to come across, but I'm just worried about you now.
Don't be worried about me.
But let's talk about demons.
I've got a sore hip.
You do, I'm very sorry.
Yeah.
Do you want me to make your hot water bottle?
Could you?
I will do after we have a quick chat about demons, because this is kind of the esoterotic aspect of things.
Okay.
There is a tie-in.
Yes, good.
So, because people... see horrible visions and experience these things. There are a lot of...
Dean's going to leave such a long comment,
oh,
isn't he?
Please, just, and it'll be really thorough, and it's lovely, Dean, but his hip hurts, my back hurts.
It's going to be so long.
Just summarise.
Yeah. Put bullet points in it, Dean, if you
yeah,
can.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
There are kind of tropes, and there are, like, reoccurring characters in sleep paralysis.
Yeah.
Across cultures.
Yes.
And across, you know, across time. Because this has been reported since, like, the 10th century or something. And treated since at least the 16th. There were, like, some Dutch doctors' reports of how we tried to treat a patient who had sleep paralysis.
Is it just literally, wake up?
Yeah. Just shouting, pack it in at them.
There you go. Another one saved.
But because the most common one is the feeling of being pinned down. Or choked. And that's what I think a lot of people will be familiar with today, this story of the old hag.
Right.
Which is often depicted as like an old woman, because old hag syndrome is another term for sleep paralysis.
Okay.
Many people used to wake up to see this kind of wizened crone on their chest, pinning them down, and they couldn't move. And so the same feeling has emerged completely separately from itself.
How consistent is the description of this old hag?
It's really interesting. A lot of the familiar characters are really close to one another. The depictions are pretty consistent throughout, what's really interesting.
What would the sceptical argument with that be? So would there be a biological explanation of that, of what you see and how you see it?
I think the sceptical argument to that would be to go more down a cultural route.
Yeah.
And try and find like a familiar kind of cultural fear of an old woman, like a witch. And so that's why there's a lot of links, historical links, with witchcraft and sleep paralysis.
I see.
So people that thought they were experiencing these horrible things thought that it was because of a curse or because of local witches or because they'd let demons into
their life. Yeah, and I guess really in my lifetime growing up, because I'm a bit older than you, but in my lifetime growing up, the tropes of paranormal, the tropes of fear, notwithstanding universal monsters and that, you know, your famous Dracula, Frankenstein sort of thing, but the tropes of fear would have been a ghost, as in a white sheet with just black hole eyes, and a witch. They would be the two things. They're, they're the most popular tropes within ghost trains, for example.
Yes, yeah.
So in my growing up, they would be the two things that represent the paranormal. So I guess witch, old hag, in terms of how they were depicted, that would make sense that people would see the epitome of fear, which probably is right, certainly generationally for a lot of people, that a witch would represent that.
Yes.
Or Wizard of Oz, you know, all that sort of thing as well, I guess. But I would struggle, I think, if this is documented scientifically or what have you, if this is proper documentation of this many people had this experience and saw this and it was exactly the same thing. And those people aren't linked.
Yeah.
But there is the thing to cling on to as well in anything but culture.
But I think when this is why it interests so many scientists at the minute, is because there doesn't seem to be an easy explanation for why these people are seeing the same thing. So at the same time, that opens up the floodgates for people that are more spiritually minded.
Right.
To maybe bring in, you know, faith or the supernatural. And, you know, plenty of people who experienced sleep paralysis believe that they were fighting for their soul, that something was trying to take their soul.
Freddy.
And so we'll get to Freddy.
Oh, really?
Yes. So if we... you're excited now, aren't you?
Not really. You're My hip's hurting.
Oh. But you do like a bit of Freddy.
I know, but I'm going through the pain barrier with this recording.
Oh, God, I'm sorry.
It's okay.
Okay. So the old hag has been documented in variations from, like, in Newfoundland, in Canada. This is where the old hag syndrome comes from. In Nigeria, they've got a demon woman, again, an old hag, who pounces on you during your dreams and, again, renders you motionless. In Japan, you get the same sensation, but also you could get a female older spirit who's, you know, in search of vengeance. And in Brazil, they've interpreted this old hag as again, it's an old hag, called Pisadeira, probably pronouncing that wrong, who attacks people who, again, sleep on their back and who have full stomachs as well.
Right.
So I see that as a warning not to eat before going to bed.
Okay.
So there's a lot of old hag stuff. There's also another, aside from the choking thing, that's also a familiar sensation, one that gained particular, let's say, fame in kind of this YouTube-y TikTok world at the minute, is a blackened, featureless silhouette of a man wearing a hat. People refer to this as the Hat Man.
Right.
Very inventive.
Yeah.
And he has been seen, again, across cultures, in people's rooms, attacking them, you know, all this sort of horrible, horrible business. And that one has been suggested, has come from more popular culture roots, because who else comes into your dreams, wants to do you harm, and wears a hat?
Has he got knifey fingers, though?
I've never seen this personally.
No. Well, yeah, of course, that would be something that would... And that, intrinsically, is the story of that anyway. Yeah. So if you're really taking that on board as a concept, you know, very famously, well, I say very famously, not as famous as it deserves to be, Wes Craven wrote Wes Craven's New Nightmare, which was essentially...
Yeah.
Freddie becoming a tulpa, essentially, which is when if there's enough belief, which was the whole concept of Nightmare on Elm Street anyway, if there's enough belief, but it was reversed to be fear. Mm. So if there's enough fear, they get strong.
Yeah.
So culturally, a tulpa would be, if it's a concept, it's not a thing, would be something that if enough people believe in it, it will be created.
Yes. Yeah.
So that's what essentially Wes Craven's New Nightmare was about, was that, you know, it was very meta, so it was that they acknowledged that it was actors playing the parts, but and they had lots of fans, and lots of fans got obsessed with it, and it created something. It created a tulpa, it became so strong that Freddy became real.
Yeah.
That's all connected to, obviously, in the first instance with Nightmare on Elm Street, the original series, is connected to dreams anyway. So if that goes in your subconscious, then, of course, that's why Freddy is, at concept, a terrifying idea.
Yeah.
That's why it was so successful at conception and its initial execution, not later on.
Yeah.
When he essentially became a song and dance man. But when it, you know, at source, that's a terrifying, brilliant idea.
Yeah. And that cultural consciousness is also seen in sleep paralysis. Like there's a community, there's a place called Pemba Island, which is just on the east coast of Africa. And there are communities there that have been plagued with kind of a collective sleep paralysis for well over a decade. And they call this creature the Popo Bawa.
Okay.
And that not only attacks them, but it sexually assaults them as well. And so loads and loads of people have said that they've seen something come into the room and they're paralysed, chokes them, it assaults them. And some people have said that they've even found proof or residue of its visitation.
I mean, are we certain that this isn't some sort of serial offender?
Well, that's it. They've looked into that. One would hope that they'd looked. But now, at least I believe they're still afflicted by this, they believe that it's a shatan, which is an evil spirit.
Right.
And people have taken to carrying little amulets with them, you know, little pages of the Quran, to try and prevent sleep paralysis.
Okay.
And prevent these kind of spectral, nocturnal sexual assaults.
Right.
Which, again, are a tradition in both esoterotica and sleep paralysis, because this is when you get things like incubi and succubi.
Yeah.
You know, the incubus and the succubus, the male demon and the female demon that pop up from hell in search of your nethers.
Yeah.
And assault you, you know.
Lusty ones.
Lusty devils. Mm. Lusty devils. So you can see when things like this are reported to people with a very religious mindset or in religious communities, how church folk can get involved and how people who believe that this is a matter for exorcism rather than the healthcare system.
Yeah, but there doesn't appear to be a actual claim of the paranormal in broad strokes. So it's all got a caveat. It's all got a, in this culture.
But there are those overarching familiarities across all the cultures.
Yeah, but I think it's generally accepted that sleep paralysis is just something that happens to people. And I know we're getting into the specifics of the old hag and, you know, you know, different cultures see different things or there are weirdly consistent things through cultures that there shouldn't be.
Yeah.
Or Freddy's in a few of them.
Yeah.
But, I mean, tell me if I'm wrong, but it feels like that aside, that frivolity aside, it's just accepted that this is something that happens to humans when they're trying to fall asleep. This this opened up, didn't it? This started with, you've got this in your marshmallows.
Yeah. But as far as I know, they still don't know why your marshmallows are behaving like this. And they still don't know why that one marshmallow is so focused on fear. And why all everything you hallucinate is set to frighten you.
Yeah, but that's,
why can't it be lovely things?
No, no, I appreciate that. But maybe lovely things do happen. Maybe it does do that.
Yeah, maybe.
And people just don't remember them bits.
Yeah.
I can't tell you what I dreamt last night. I've got no idea. Mm. But I know that it was clear as anything when I dreamt it.
Yeah.
So maybe it does do that. Maybe there are nice things, nice side effects as well as the bad side effects. But the bad side effects are so potent and so unnerving and stick with you far more than, you know, you're on a cruise ship and you get to the big hall and who's the entertainment?
Oh, God.
Can you hear me? Tonight I'm going to be singing some beautiful songs. My friend Simply on the tambourine. Simply, why are you on the tambourine? Get off the tambourine. Let me see. That's a tangerine, Simply. Tangerine. Oh, I've got this all wrong, haven't I? Oh, Simply, what am I going to do with you? That happened on a cruise I was on once.
Did it?
No, never on a cruise.
Well, I think as lovely as that is,
yeah,
with sleep paralysis, you don't transport.
I thought I distracted you then.
You don't transport. You're
making
still in your
quite
room.
Good points, and I thought, right, bring Simpy and the King in.
Well, you could. Why
put her
don't,
off.
Why don't you have sleep paralysis?
Yeah.
When you're in bed, and who should come through the door? But Simpy in his tangerine.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. No, that goes back into fear again. I'm sorry. I've wrapped myself up in my own point.
I've never had this.
Mm-hmm.
Or if I have, I've not recalled it. So mm-hmm. I've never had this sleep paralysis thing that seems to be all the rage with the kids these days. Yeah. That's never happened to me, though. Mm. It hasn't, where I've woke up and can't move and there's been frightening things going on. I've had bad dreams, Natch.
Yeah.
But I've not had this scenario happen
to
me.
It's like nightmares and night terrors and all of that.
Yeah.
Where you can lash out accidentally and hurt people.
I'm not sure I've done that, you know.
I have.
Have you? I don't think I've lashed out in my sleep. I don't think I have.
I used to have real serious problems sleeping.
Right.
Probably up until my early 20s.
Okay.
Where, like, I'd have such... I used to sleepwalk really badly.
What, like, just doing it in circles and bumping into walls?
Did you know that murder while you're sleepwalking has been used as a defence case in, I think it's like 68?
Successfully?
But it has
never
been used.
Successfully.
I don't know if it's ever been used successfully. I think maybe once or twice it has been.
Right.
And they're kind of like infamous cases. But I know it's been used like broad, like 70 times, nearly 70 times in court cases. So there you are. That's a fun fact.
Yeah.
I mean, this isn't me saying, and that is how my other sibling died. but also, I had really quite severe night terrors.
Okay.
For a long time, and there was one incident where, this is a very Kate's mum-heavy podcast today, but we were on a family holiday, I think in like my early teens, and I remember this incident so vividly. I'd had a really bad night's sleep, and we were in the same bedroom, and I was lashing out, and I was clearly like screaming and trying to wake up.
Okay.
And my mum tried to shake me to wake me up because I was hurting myself.
Yeah.
But I remember waking up and it wasn't my mum. It was someone, like, she was speaking backwards.
Right.
And her face was all scribbly. Like, so, like, you know, like, you've seen it in American yearbooks where they scribble out, like, their crush that betrayed them.
I think we watch different films, but okay, I know what you mean.
But it was like that. She was speaking backwards.
Right.
And her eyes were all scribbled out. I was properly screaming.
You've given your mum a hiding on this podcast today.
I took a chunk out of her face.
Oh, did you really?
I scratched, like, quite seriously scratched it. And then when I woke up, obviously, I thought, oh my God, what have I done? I still feel awful about it to this day.
I mean,
I think I've apologised about it every year since.
But you've essentially gone on a public podcast now.
Mm.
And really, in terms of how you've been speaking, called your mum an old hag. It's what you've essentially done.
My mum is a true beauty, thank you very much. And she was also Miss Personality at a beauty contest.
Was she genuinely?
She was Miss Personality.
Wow, there's a backhanded award.
She's very beautiful. She's a very beautiful woman.
I'm not sure of what the point I was trying to make in this episode was.
Mm.
I'm a bit confused by it.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what I was trying to argue, because it wasn't an argument. There was no argument there.
Mm.
Yeah, I was still looking for things to go, well, of course this, well, of course this. It's like, well, no one's claiming that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It was quite an odd thing that... It felt like a concept that had whiffs of paranormal and whiffs of esoteric.
Yeah.
But I couldn't grasp it. It was all like wispy bits of things.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
quite an interesting way of looking at stuff. There was nothing defined to it.
No.
That I could sort of zone in on.
Yeah.
And I think I was kind of accusatory about things that hadn't been claimed.
No. That's okay.
Isn't that weird, though? Yeah. But that's kind of Pavlovian, isn't it? I guess that must be just my general attitude and mood to this sort of thing.
Yeah.
It's like...
I have to be contrary.
Not even contrary, just I can knock this down. It's simple to knock it down. But that, I think there has to be a definite claim.
Yeah.
And there doesn't appear to be a definite claim with sleep paralysis.
No. It's a tricky old thing, isn't it?
You threw me by talking about brains. Now I'm thinking about my brain, but my brain is the one that's thinking it, and the brain is thinking of itself. And the whole thing is just a big, horrible circle. And I'm going to struggle to sleep tonight. I better see an old hag. I should point out that not that me and your mum have arranged anything, of course.
Oh, I hate you. So
can't really rule it out, though, can you not?
Well, she is a beauty.
Yeah, and so am I. It's a match made in heaven.
Oh, please don't do this.
Have a mental image of it right now.
No.
Yeah, just think about it.
No,
right
my
now.
My mum's listening. My
Maybe
mom's
if everybody who's listened to this imagines it right now,
don't.
We could create a tulpa.
My mum, as Miss Personality, is not going to be a tulpa. Yeah. She's a lovely
lady.
No,
it'll be both of us. We'll be combined.
No,
a combined
she's a lovely lady.
Beast with two backs tulpa.
Oh, you are horrid. She's a lovely lady and she's endured so much.
Yeah. Oh, okay, then I wouldn't wish myself on her in that case.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
So, if you'd like to get in touch,
yeah,
please do.
Not the law. Not law enforcement, thank you.
Well, you can do so by leaving comments on either of our Patreons at patreon.com/IanBaldsworth and patreon.com/burialsandbeyond. That's me. And you can find us, like us and comment on Facebook at Loopholes Podcast, Instagram at Loopholes Pod, Twitter at Loopholes Pod, and you can send us an email at loopholespodcast@gmail.com. Thank you very much for listening. And we'll have more esoterotic business next week. I've been Kate Cheryl.
And I've been Ian Bolesworth.
Goodbye.
Betty, come round about 10-ish. 10.
Hey.
Is that your mum's name, Betty? Have I got it right?
No, it was my nana's name.
Was it?
Yeah. Dun, dun, dun. Oh.
Intergenerational filth.
Oh, no. Right, I'm going.
Loopholes is an Infinite Hermit production in association with Burials and Beyond, with Kate Cheryl and Ian Boldsworth. Music by Thomas Funderay, produced by Ian Boldsworth.